the transmission of the lamp.
That's right.
So, good evening, Bodhisattvas, and welcome to our third annual Desert Sunrise Retreat. And it's wonderful to see so many of you back again, either from right at Desert Rain Zen in Tucson or down from Santa Fe. And it's wonderful to have new people sitting with us, Fred from very far away, and James, who sits with us all the time, doing our retreat with us. So welcome, everybody. It's also a special retreat and a joyous occasion because we're doing our first refuge ceremony. James and Connie are taking precepts, and our head of practice, Jen, is going to renew her vows, and Piper will step in as a cantor. Piper originally did refuge the same year that Jen and I did with our teacher, Joan, up in Santa Fe. So that's all pretty great. We're going to have the refuge ceremony tomorrow night because of people's schedules and so on. Usually we do it the last night. So in some sense, it tends to fit well doing it toward the end because we're sort of having moved into the retreat. We're getting ready to move back out, and pretty clearly the refuge vows, precepts, have a lot to do with taking our practice out into the world. So we'll circle back around to some of those questions toward the end of the retreat again. And I think it's always auspicious to have a chance to wonder about what our practice does for us and lets us do for the world, and not only to think about taking refuge, but whether we're able to give refuge and whether our practice helps us to do that in a deeper and more helpful way. And pretty clearly, sitting a retreat in 2018 in the good old US of A is a really good time to think about what our practice might help us to do. So I hope we'll spend some time with that, and I plan to as we move forward. So where are we going to sit this week? Where might we find ourselves? There's one tried and true map of possible places that we could go, and that's, well, there are many, but here's one: Shitto, taking part in the gathering, which offers a capacious, inclusive, and subtle charting of the territory. So here's just a little bit from the Sandokai taking part in the gathering. The mysterious sort of the bright is clear and unstained. Branches of light stream from that dark. Trying to control things is only delusion, but hanging on to the absolute isn't enlightenment either. We and everything we perceive are interwoven and not interwoven, and this interweaving continues on and on while each thing stands in its own place. So there's the dark mysterious. All of us will likely approach it this week in one way or another, or sink toward it with one feeling or another: gratitude, awe, maybe fear or simple terror, or feel ourselves enveloped by it, maybe right out of the blue. Or the branches of streaming light, as things grow radiant and still, or radiant, buzzing and still, or seem to shift and morph ceaselessly while palpably held in an enveloping calm, vast silence and stillness that streams right up through them. Or the particular people and flora and fauna around us, the clouds and the rocks, not seeming quite themselves sometimes, or not only themselves, interwoven, interpermeating, part of a seamless, ceaseless flow of which we're also part. But also, as things around us or we ourselves seem to snap out of that enchantment, each thing exactly itself, wham, in all its gritty, tenacious, and troublesome individuality, standing in its own place, and happy to do so, thank you very much. Here's a beautiful passage from Joan's Vimalakirti and the Awakened Heart that gets at these multiple vantages and how they interpenetrate. Here the emphasis falls on enchantment, on the dreamlike quality of things, the Dharmakaya aspect, the vastness and stillness palpable as the other form or emptiness of ourselves and all our companions. She's talking about the passage of the sutra where we're told that Vimalakirti is pretending to be sick. She takes this pretending to be something less tactical and manipulative, something deeper and more inescapable, than the ethically questionable duplicity or ruse of that old Zen teaching trick, skillful means, trying to leverage someone else's awakening by purposely pulling the wool over their eyes. It's starting to go a bit dreamlike and mysterious inside this pretending. Yunmen, another Chan teacher, asks a question that takes us further along that path. See how vast and wide the world is. Why do you get up and get dressed at the sound of the morning bell? Why, in the midst of the unfathomable vastness, do you get up every morning when the alarm goes off and start another ordinary day? Why do I come out of the deep space of sleep every morning and put on my human skin and go out to live a human life? Maybe it's because each of us in the vastness, maybe it's because each of us is the vastness manifesting in a particular way. You're this person, I'm that person. There are the bird persons under the eaves and the ground cover persons just beginning to spread in the courtyard. We put on our clothes when the alarm goes off because for another day, we accept the invitation to be the vastness taking this form, and we'll try not to be stingy about it. We'll pretend to be human beings in our human being skins, not in the sense of a false performance, but remembering that we're both born and unborn, named and unnamed, human and everything else in the universe too. There's a sense of play about this. The performance today is heavily flavored by memories of childhood summers at the beach, or comically ramifying lists of tasks, or it is stained and dyed by silence. And then skipping ahead a little bit. Unbeguiled by the lure of skillful means, I marvel instead as my hand figures out, moment by moment, what it means to be a hand, and my heart learns what a heart is on a sunny morning after days of fog. Are they, am I, pretending? Not exactly, but sort of. If pretending means a series of essays and approximations, one not knowing flowing into another, with lots of pauses to listen. Outside my window are subatomic particles pretending to be trees. The world isn't only a dream, but it is in part. How do we tend to a dream? That's a sensibility, no surprise, shaped by, among other influences, Joan's lifelong immersion in koans. Like this passage, the koans often work by opening our hearts to this sort of interpermeation, not just of particular things by one another, but also the interpermeation of the multiple large perspectives conveyed by Joan here or by the Shitto, the dark mysterious, the streaming light that holds everything, that is everything, the interweaving, and the non-interweaving, each thing standing firm in its own place, Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, Nirmanakaya. Why so many koans? Well, why so many diverse circumstances, each hide and seeking, concealing and revealing in its own unique way the presence of the vastness and stillness? If a particular koan opens for us and opens us, maybe that's sometimes because the particular circumstance it evokes resonates powerfully for us for whatever individual reason. And so it carries us right into the vastness, the Dharmakaya. But I think it works the other way around too. For a while, Joan and Awakened Life in Santa Fe came up with a series of pocket koans, beautifully printed tiny booklets. You could pull them out of your pocket in an emergency if the circumstance you were in somehow resembled one of those koans and made you think of it. And as you did so, maybe in difficult circumstances, the recollection that the vastness and stillness are still right there, present in just that kind of hard time, might sustain you, hold you up in a way that could feel palpable and bodily. As we sit with koans this week, I want to encourage you not to cut to the chase. What's the meaning of this one? What's the takeaway, the moral or the lesson? But to hang with the particular circumstances as these light up for you, for each of us in different ways. All sayings return to the self, the tradition reminds us. Where am I in this story or this scene? The koans functions as metaphors. As the poet Wallace Stevens says of metaphors, they isolate a particular resemblance and heighten it, they make it brilliant. What is there in this story or scene I'm asked to imagine that speaks to me because I recognize it, maybe with surprise, as overlapping something important and elemental in my life? And how does this koan, this resemblance, re-accent or recolor that experience? Let me feel something of this sort of circumstance. Let me feel something in this sort of circumstance and in my life that I maybe couldn't before. Kenneth Burke says of poems, or let's say koans, that they have an incantatory function. They invite us to make ourselves over in the image of the imagery and help us on our way as we take up their invitation. Hawken, about some drastic koans, offers a more drastic but related formulation. The student doesn't realize he's being given a method to change his very bones. In what sort of dire circumstances might we be willing to change our very bones? The koan commentaries, which can be mordant and twisty, like to say of the apparently not exactly everyday circumstances they offer for our consideration, at such a time, or at just such a time, how would you respond? Conspicuously hypothetical, as if acknowledging the far-fetched quality of the circumstance and dilemma they present. And every time they say this, you can take this to the bank. Watch out. Can you speak, they demand? It isn't a question. Speak, speak! The apparently outlandish circumstance, the Koans insist, is on some deep level already our own. We're in it right now. Here's part of a koan, one you might choose to sit with or not. It's on the koan handout sheets in the hall, which I want to encourage you to take with you tonight. There are two of them. We spent a little time with it last year in retreat. We sit with it all the time in Tucson. The emperor asks for the tomb's design. Emperor Su Zhang asked national teacher Zhang, "What should I do after you die?" "Build a seamless tomb for me," replied the national teacher. "What should the tomb's design be?" There was a long silence, and then the national teacher asked, "Do you understand?" We'll talk about this koan down the road, but I'll note in passing that it's an odd question, as far as we know, out of the blue, for the emperor to ask his teacher, "What should I do after you die?" He must have had something on his mind. Maybe you can hold off a little on deciding what the tomb's design should be, and just sit there with or as the emperor, sitting with his teacher for a while in silence. What should I do after you die? But if sitting in silence is good, isn't that why we're here? The koans are also mordant about the lure of this experience and the danger of getting stuck. When you get here, they say over and over, you need a place to turn around. For the bodhisattva, Joan liked to say, Ma said, to be stuck in emptiness is to suffer the torments of hell. Luckily, we have some aspiring bodhisattvas, which is to say bodhisattvas, taking refuge this week. Our ceremony's tomorrow night, actually, because of some special circumstances, rather than toward the retreat's end. But we'll take some time later this week to consider our own relationships to the precepts. Peter Hirschak, one of Joan's favorite Chan scholars, writes, "It's not enough to know what Buddha nature is. You have to know what Buddha nature does. You have to be able to put it to use on the road," the koans say. How do we pick our roads, we might ask, or how do they pick us? Is the practice any good to us? Are we any good to others? I want to close with a poem by Wallace Stevens. It's also on the Koan seminar handout out in the hall. It might feel kind of out of the blue, given my focus so far, but it's not at all outside the big and various territory Shito's poem maps. Since you don't have it in front of you, hymn is H-Y-M-N, and meet is M-E-E-T, as in appropriate, as in the antiquated, it is meet that I should praise you. Though given the context, there's an alligator in the poem, it might make you think for a moment of M-E-A-T. Nomad exquisite. As the immense dew of Florida brings forth the big-finned palm and green vine angering for life, as the immense dew of Florida brings forth him and him from the beholder, beholding all these green sides and gold sides of green sides, and blessed mornings meet for the eye of the young alligator and lightning colors, so in me come flinging forms, flames, and the flakes of flames. Thank you.